Before we start our class, which I have here, it's a serious class because it's a discussion how we, who are under the grip of time fiercely, how we can come out of that situation. But before we start that class, I would like to share with you something else that's very beautiful that Srila Rupa Goswami has written. Now this particular book is quite lengthy, and so what I did was I went through and selected some certain portions to read, and some I will summarize for you. This book is called Uddhav Sandesh. And Uddhav Sandesh is the other poem that Srila Rupa Goswami wrote. It's the other poem that Srila Rupa Goswami wrote as a complement to the poem called Hansadutta, which was describing the anguish of Srimati Radharani when Krishna left Vrindavan. So this is the other side. One day in Mathura, Lord Krishna was sitting on a throne in his Krida Bhavan, that means his palace for pastimes or playing. As he looked out, he could see the flowers had started to bloom and new leaves were sprouting on the trees. He thought to himself that Mathura looked like a new bride. As he was appreciating that sweet scene, the remembrance of his Vrindavan pastimes bloomed in his heart. Thereafter, Lord Krishna, due to the sudden remembrance of Vrindavan, started to breathe very heavily, and the lotus garland around his neck began to shake. As Krishna remembered his amazing pastimes with the Braj Gopis, incessant tears flowed from his eyes. Due to his being unable to enjoy those pastimes again, he became stunned and looked like a painted picture. Then Lord Krishna thought for a moment how to cross to the other shore of that ocean of distress. And he proceeded up to the jewel-studded roof of the palace. Seeing that Uddhava had come close to him, he wished to reveal his heart. But due to feelings of love, no words were able to come. O ocean of good qualities, Uddhava, you are my closest relative. Due to your advice and directions, we Yadavas are enjoying full prosperity. For these reasons, I wish to give you the service of fulfilling a very secret desire of mine. If one gives one's desired work to a person full of good qualities, then he is sure of the result. Oh, my friend, when we heard from Gandini Nandana is another name for Akrura. When we heard from him Kamsa's puffed up order, we came along with him from Vrindavan to Mathura. At that time, the young Braj Gopis entered into an ocean of separation from me. Oh, my dear friend, now they are somehow or another keeping their life force within their bodies. Of all those gopis, beautiful Srimati Radharani has no equal and is more dear to me than my life. She is somehow at this time remaining alive only due to Lalita and her other gopi friends tactfully convincing her that I will be returning to Vrindavan very soon. O best of advisers, Uddhava, please go to Nandagram, the capital of Nanda Maharaj, which is situated on a beautiful hill covered by wonderful creepers and the best of trees, and surrounded by a wall made of priceless jewels. And there, kindly deliver my message to Radharani, who has been bitten by the snake of separation and is feeling unlimited anguish in her heart. Please try to bring her back to life and make her happy again. Oh, my friend, in this universe, there are many holy and important places where I appear in various deity forms to bring happiness to my pure devotees like yourself. But I honestly swear to you that there is no place which brings more happiness to my heart than Gokul Vraj. There in Braj Vrindavan, what to speak of the moving beings, even the trees, the creepers, the grass, and the other non-moving living entities would have become burnt up in the fire of separation long ago if it were not for the tears of the gopis falling on them. My dear friend, when the gopis would see me even a little distressed, they became very unhappy. But they would not become even a little distressed if a mountain of unhappiness came upon them. So please, do not tell them about the unlimited unhappiness that I am feeling due to their separation. Simply remind them how much I love them. Oh brother, Nandishwar Hill is far from Mathura. So you please leave immediately. The road is easy and it's very beautiful. When you enter into that ocean of bliss upon seeing Vraj, I will also become happy. Because when a highly qualified person becomes happy, his dear friends become also. Then Krishna begins to describe to Uddhava the way that he will go. He describes the different places of his pastimes that he'll pass through on his way to getting to Nanda Maharaja's place. He says, Uddhava, when the gopis were busy churning the curd, I used to steal their butter and feed it to my boyfriends and thus making them very happy. That place is full of flowering trees and is famous by the name of Pitashavas. You will certainly be relieved of your fatigue there. Now, by this time, he's coming quite close to Nandagram, Krishna's describing. With banana trees shaking by the agitated winds and full of fragrant Ashok flowers, that beautiful, wonderful, transcendental abode, Nandagram, of Nanda Maharaj, will bring you unlimited bliss. On the southern side of that Nandagram is the place that even today is called Vidyutkari, Vrajavari. When the gopis saw I was going to Mathura, they became grief-stricken and bewildered, and they fell down there as if they were struck by lightning bolts. Now, as Krishna is describing to Uddhava what he will see when he gets there, and what he should do when he gets there, he starts to remember the conversations between the gopis. And they're speaking so many sweet words back and forth between them. And they keep coming back in his mind. So he's remembering them. Then he says, in that Nandagram, early in the morning, as the gopis would start churning the butter, their arms looked wonderfully beautiful, and drops of perspiration decorated their cheeks. Their hair covered their foreheads, making them look very beautiful. And with their lotus mouths, they would sing about my pastimes. When the sound of the bangles decorating the arms of those lotus-eyed gopis mingled with the sound of the churning and singing, I would happily awaken from my sleep. And he describes more about the gopis' conversations about him. And then he says, my dear Uddhava, in this way those beautiful gopi girls spoke such soft words which were full with deep meaning and love. Due to their pure and simple nature, I would enthusiastically listen to those talks. Where is the chance to hear those sweet words now? He's remembering. Oh, gentle girl. So someone is speaking to Vishakha. Listen. Oh, gentle girl, Vishakha. Who is this beautiful, dark-complexioned girl? She is a cowherd man's daughter. Why has she come here? She has come here to tie the knot of friendship with you. I immediately accept her as my close friend. Then embrace her very tightly. Oh, Uddhava, when Radha embraced me, she realized I was Krishna and she became very embarrassed. In Vraj, remembering more and more, he says, there are many kuns on the bank of which we drove many beautiful stakes into the ground. I made them with my own hand, along with the cowherd boys, out of pure stone, to tie up the frolicsome, happy calves who were always trying to run away. And then he's remembering so many more beautiful things about Vrindavan. And then he remembers when he was leaving. Oh, fair one, he says. This is the gopis speaking to each other. What kind of future has the Creator written for us gopis? In the evening, the king's messenger Akrura arrived in Nandagram and was whispering some secret things in Krishna's ear in private. Another girl says, O restless girl, following the order of Nanda Maharaj, the police officer is announcing in the marketplace, today Krishna is going to Mathura. Another gopi says, my right eye is twitching again and again, giving the sign of something very inauspicious, and my heart is breaking into pieces. Who knows what our destiny will be? Another gopi says, oh my dear friend, when I heard that Krishna would be going to Mathura tomorrow, I prayed that the night would go slowly. But just see, that sinful night showed her real character by passing so quickly. It is true that black things, in the mode of ignorance, never care for others. So then the gopis continue on, very, very sad, hearing their last moments with Krishna and Krishna's last moments with them. So then Krishna's describing what he wants the message to be that he's sending to the residents of Vrindavan. So he describes in general what Uddhava should tell them, what he will see when he gets there, and then he talks about the message to his parents. He says, after, we heard yesterday, of course, of the killing of Kamsa. So he says, after I killed Kamsa in front of everyone, I spoke sweet and gentle words of enlightenment to Nanda Baba and sent him back to Vraj. Taking my name, you should very gently and respectfully surrender at his lotus feet, saying, Krishna offers his unlimited obeisances. Then taking my name on your lips, offer my full obeisances to the lotus feet of... This is very sad. I will. and taking my name on your lips, offer my full obeisances to the lotus feet of my mother. I am her only son. She is thus feeling unlimited pain, and she has become very skinny. She again and again raised her finger, cursing Kamsa. You have taken my Krishna away, so I will destroy you. She is always singing my names, and in a deep mood of separation, she takes low, slow breaths and says, Ha Krishna, Ha Krishna. She becomes bathed in her own perspiration and her body withers while tears gush from her eyes, choking her breath, soaking her clothes. She stares intently at the road to Mathura, waiting for my return. Then Krishna gets to the most intense part where he begins to speak about the message he wants to send to the gopis. O ocean of good qualities, Uddhava, you are going to Nandagram as the messenger of this offender. There the gopis are suffering under the distress of separation. Each and every one of their limbs are agitated. Maybe they will curse you. But if you present yourself before them in a very self-controlled, humble way, with your hands folded, they will see that this sinless servant is repentant for his master's actions. When the gopis see you are wearing the same clothes as me and look just like me, they will come close to you, thinking you to be me. But when they realize their mistake, they will become very surprised, restless, doubtful, and their minds will become fickle. Various other moods will rise within them, and then they will start talking amongst themselves, but you stay there without obstructing them and slowly deliver my captivating message. So then Krishna speaks a message for each gopi. He has a message for everyone. And he gets to the, when he's speaking to Vishakha, we heard before, Vishakha made an arrangement for Krishna to come and meet with Radha. So he says to Vishakha, O Vishakha, you are so fortunate because you can express the pain and anguish of your heart to your gopi friends and thus gain some relief. But unfortunately, I have no one here in Mathura to express my heart to. Then finally, after he has given his beautiful prayers and his best wishes to all the gopis, he says, My dear friend, you are going to Nanda Maharaja's Nandagram will not just serve my purpose, but you will attain the topmost benefit when you see the spontaneous loving mood of the Vrajavasis towards me. And when you remember these sweet words of mine, you will understand their mood. So Rupa Goswami finishes this poem by saying, He who always relishes Krishna's transcendental Vraj pastimes and who dances in great ecstasy all over Mathura Mandala, who do you think that is? He who always relishes Krishna's transcendental Vraj pastimes and dances in great ecstasy all over Mathura Mandala, whose lotus feet Rupa Goswami eternally takes shelter of. May this poem cause that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart to overflow with ecstatic love. That most merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who enjoys childhood pastimes with Sridham and the other cowherd boys, who dances with the young, beautiful gopis, and also playfully destroys many demons, should be remembered, for he can deliver you from to the other shore of the ocean of birth and death. Srila Rupa Goswami Ki Jai. So this is the inner mood of Rupa Goswami. He's meditating continuously, directly, seeing, feeling, experiencing, and beautifully poetically depicting these moods of Vrindavan. Now for some of us we might feel, or at least I remember for myself in my early days of Krishna consciousness, I thought that Krishna was really cruel to the gopis. And what if I was to surrender to him and he's just going to leave me? And he's just going to make me miserable. So what's the use? There isn't anything to gain. But actually, although we can only very slightly enter into it, there's an extraordinary, exquisite type of happiness that comes within their mood of separation. Because within their mood of separation, here in this world, if somebody in your family dies suddenly, there's so much grief. But within that grief, there's no happiness. You won't ever see them again. You may console yourself in many ways, but there's grief that doesn't contain happiness. But the grief of the residents of Vrindavan, Mother Yasoda, who became so thin, they stopped eating in her house. When Uddhava came, no cooking had gone on since Krishna left. She had not eaten anything. The pots and pans were all covered in cobwebs. Krishna's toys were still scattered all over the floor. She hadn't gone on with her life because all of her life was Krishna and Krishna was not there. So we would think, oh gosh, that sounds awful. But actually, internally, because the Braja Gopis have an inner life, and unfortunately for us, we don't have an inner life. We have a mind. And our mind goes on and on and on and on. I want this, I want that, how to do this, how to do that. And if I look inside myself, I just find my mind. But inside themselves, they have a wealth of love for Krishna. And so they constantly go over and over and over and over what Krishna has done, where he has been, what he touched, what he said, what he liked, what he wanted. And this is what goes on and on and on instead of a mind. So this is beyond the reach of time. But here we are. What are we going to do? Srila Rupa Goswami, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose particular kindness is that he appears in the age of Kali Yuga, where people are becoming rapidly, by the day, more and more and more fallen. He appears to give a process or a bridge or a way, a means that we can come towards Krishna in this difficult age. Now, I have to say that most people in this difficult age would say, okay, is it a pill? And does it work immediately? If it's a pill and it works immediately, I'll take it. If there's any effort or work involved, then it's too much for me. I've got too much to do, and anyway, I've got lots and lots of things that are on my mind as well. So we have to be careful of that mentality ourselves also in Krishna consciousness, where we think, okay, tell me the magic formula so I can quickly get all this done, and get on with enjoying life as I usually do. So that's a problem, because if it's that quick and it's going to help me get on with life as I usually do, we're going to be cheated. Somebody's going to come along with a long beard and say, Shanti, Shanti, Om Shanti, here you take this mantra, you don't change anything in your life, never mind, those things God understands, or you can become God. Actually, all you have to do is this very simple, simple thing. And how many people in India and also in the West do we meet who have been somehow or other cheated in their spiritual endeavors? And actually, this is a symptom of Kali Yuga, that when you do become serious enough to look for a path, you get a cheating guru, because Also, you know, we have the entertainment industry and the hospitality industry. We also have the spirituality industry. And there are plenty of people working in that sector. And so if you're interested, you can dial a spiritualist and there you are and off you go. And so there are people who make their money like that. So this is not the process of Srila Rupa Goswami, obviously. Prabhupada says, if you regularly hear about Krishna, and then he asks, why regularly? And we would think, yes, why regularly? Prabhupada says, why regularly? Constantly. If we practice in such a way that we shall hear about Krishna, talk about Krishna, chant about Krishna, eat about Krishna, work about Krishna, sleep about Krishna, walk about Krishna, that is the Krishna consciousness movement. Anything we do in relationship with Krishna is pious. Punya Shravana Kirtana. This is the instruction of Srila Rupa Goswami. Dovetail everything with Krishna activities. That is the recommendation. Then our lives will be successful. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Anashaktasya Vishayan Yattarham Upayunjata Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. This is interesting. Listen to Prabhupada. He says, you should not be attached to Krishna's property. We should not be attached to Krishna's property. So when we say, okay, the temple is Krishna's property, I shouldn't be too attached to the temple. I stay at home in my house. You see, our mind is so wicked. But wait a minute. Krishna's property is everything. Krishna's property is everywhere. Prabhupada says, the kamis are attached. The kamis, kami means a fruitive person. A person who's working in this world and they want the result for themselves. Now, I thought about this for a while once and I thought, like, how can you imagine going to work and then you come home and you say, no, you don't have to pay me. You know, I mean, it wouldn't work. You've got to be fruitive. And how could you sort of do an activity and not look at the result? You'd be a little bit lackadaisical. You know, okay, I'm coming to the temple. I didn't make it. It's all right. That's all right. It doesn't matter. I'm not attached. So there's a very fine line between being fruitive and being very deliberate and trying to achieve a result. There's a very, very fine line. It's like as if there's a line here and coming towards here, you're becoming more and more deliberate and trying to achieve a result and you get past that line and you're becoming fruitive. And why are you becoming fruitive? Because now I've achieved the result and it's mine. I work very hard, here's the result, it's mine. And generally in Kali Yuga, especially you see in communist countries, if you take this fruitive mentality and you crush it, then they don't do anything. Because it's either fruitive, it's mine, if it belongs to the state, it belongs to everyone, well, to hell with it, I don't care anyway. So therefore we see, if devotees aren't mature, oftentimes they don't do very well when they're told that everything belongs to Krishna, you should do this for Krishna, because Krishna's not very tangible and I'm very tangible, you know, and so if I'm not doing it for me, it doesn't carry the same weight. So for years and years in our devotional life, we can go on with this bhakti mixed with karma. And we don't sort of define it to ourselves because the bhakti is there. It's valid, there's bhakti there. But there's this other part as well. We're mixed with this karmic, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. I did it. You didn't do it, I did it. So why are you saying that you did something? And everything comes back to me still. So there we need further purification to understand, no, it's Krishna's. And then to what is the best nullifier of that is, okay, you say it's yours, but you're Krishna's. If you're Krishna's, then it's Krishna's. So what's wrong with you? So we have to push ourselves to to understand more deeply or go beyond this platform of karma mixed with bhakti. Okay, so the karmis are attached to Krishna's property. They are trying to steal unlawfully and enjoy Krishna's property. That is karmi. And the jnanis, the so-called jnanis. Okay, so now I've become a little bit advanced. Out of ignorance, they are trying to renounce Krishna's property. I don't want it anymore. The jnanis, they are very much proud that they are advanced in knowledge and renouncing. But if somebody says, "Sir, what are you renouncing?" "I'm renouncing this world." All right. When did this world become your property that you are renouncing? When did this world become your property? You renounce something which you possess, but if you do not possess something, what is the meaning of your renunciation? You came here. Now we had yesterday, I saw, I don't know if they're still here today, one very small baby. I don't know if they're still present, but the baby was wrapped up in a blanket and looked very tiny compared to us. And the mother came out of the temple room with the baby and I thought, oh wow, that's a tiny baby. So we all started like that, as tiny babies. And before we were tiny babies, you came here empty-handed. You live here for some time and you go away. So in the beginning you are not the proprietor, and when you go away you are not the proprietor. So what is the reason and what is the meaning of your renouncement? This is also a defect. So therefore, says Srila Prabhupada, with this yukta vairagya, we do not renounce. We think, we see that everything is given to us by Krishna. Nothing belongs to me. Everything is Krishna's. Now just imagine in our family life, for example, if we felt like that. Imagine how different it would be. Imagine how much easier it would be to manage the difficulties that may arise. Because both people would be malleable. Both people would be able to say, actually, you are not mine. This is difficult that we're trying to manage so many things, fighting against the material energy, the modes of nature and so forth. But actually, it's all right. We'll do this for Krishna's pleasure because you belong to Krishna, I belong to Krishna. Let us continue to try to please him. So this process, we can only maybe theoretically understand it, but we can see theoretically that it would be much better than when we think this is mine, this is mine, this is mine, and this is mine as well. And we may say, another doubt may come and we'll say, okay, so I say, I'm going to say this is Krishna's, but he's going to say it's mine. So what do I do when I'm dealing with people who are there going to say it's mine? And I'm going to say it's Krishna's. How will I protect myself? This is a valid argument. If I'm going to become passive or inactive on the material, aggressive material way, what's going to happen to me? And if you're going to say that I'm yours, let's start with that. I am yours. So where will I turn for my shelter if I belong to you? I will turn to you for my shelter because I belong to you. And you'll have to take care of me more because I'm in a dangerous situation. You'll have to take care of me because I belong to you. No one puts their valued property out on the street for the cars to run over and for someone to steal. So as soon as we identify, even ourselves, I belong to Krishna, half the problem is solved right there. And more than half the problem is solved because then that person is already safe. And we should understand that the material world isn't a safe place. And there is only one safety, and that is actually with Krishna. Nothing belongs to me. Everything is Krishna's. Even my body, that is also Krishna's. My mind, that is also Krishna's. My thoughts, that is also Krishna's. My speech, that is Krishna's. Whatever I create, everything belongs to Krishna. This is Krishna philosophy. And actually, that is the fact. So that is the fact. It's not just Prabhupada has made a nice lifestyle philosophy so we can lead a peaceful life and have a happy family and so forth. This is actually the truth. This is the truth. Our policy, says Prabhupada, is not that to decry material advancement of civilization. But our instruction is, do not forget your real business, self-realization. Unfortunately, material attraction is so strong, and we all know this, that it makes us forgetting our spiritual necessities of life. We forget that this is the most important thing for me, to develop my faith in Krishna. This human form of life is given by nature for fulfillment of our spiritual necessities. So, Srila Rupa Goswami, now we're here and there's a nice little badge of Srila Rupa Goswami just at the feet of Gopinath, which was given to us all at the VIHE Govardhan retreat last year. It must have been one of the devotees from Russia had painted these little buttons. So I brought that with me. So we're all sitting at the feet of Srila Rupa Goswami. So Prabhupada, at the time when he is speaking, he is sitting at the feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, means that he and the other devotees are sitting in front of Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. And Srila Prabhupada is teaching the devotees from nectar of devotion. And this auspicious occasion took place in 1972. So Prabhupada says, so Srila Rupa Goswami, in front of whom we are now speaking, he gave us the definition how to make progress in spiritual life. Everyone is blind after material way of life. So this mission of human life is to get out of these clutches of Maya. That is the real mission of life. We, says Srila Prabhupada, are missing the point. We are accepting this body as everything. And the modern civilization means to enjoy bodily comforts as much as possible. That is the perfection of civilization. No, that is not the perfection of civilization. They do not know, especially the demons, the non-devotees, they do not know. So at least for a few days, and we have done this, let us sit down here under the protection of Srila Rupa Goswami. This place is very sanctified. They used to assemble here. So we are not going to imitate them, but we want a place under the shelter of their lotus feet to discuss something of their contribution. Then our lives may one day also become successful. So this is what Srila Rupa Goswami has kindly given us for the last few days, a sanctified place where under the shelter of their lotus feet we can hear something from Srila Rupa Goswami's heart. And his heart, of course, is so far out of our reach. We can't imagine. But at the same time, we can also feel how he is creating for us an attempt. Please come. Please come. This life is meant for that. Now, this next quote was given by Srila Prabhupada in 1976. And guess where he was? He was in Melbourne. He wasn't sitting in Vrindavan. He was sitting in front of Sri Sri Radha Vallabha. And so therefore, who was he looking at when he said this? He said, he is sitting with me. He is so friendly. He is giving us guidance always. And he is waiting for the time when you shall give up your desires and surrender to the other bird, the observing bird. That is Krishna Radha Balava. Paramatma is so kind that I am taking a body of a human being, so he is there. I am taking the body of an animal, he is there. I am taking the body of a demigod, he is there. He is so nice friend. He is always there and giving me good advice that why are you suffering in this way, creating your desires and suffering? Why are you doing this? Better you stop this. You surrender to me. Come back home, back to Godhead. This, he is always asking. So Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshe Arjuna Tishtati. He is staying in everyone's heart and he is omnipotent. Now that's a word that's used in the Christian theology. In many Christian prayers, we use these words, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, because they come from Latin. And much of the Christian theology comes to us from the Latin language. So these words, they're very like magnificent words. The omni means like all. Omnipotent, all potent. Just imagine if you had a friend who had all potencies. They could do anything. They were so powerful. Imagine if you had a friend like that. What would you do with him? And how many of us would be like the lady in the forest, right, who dropped her bundle of wood? And very difficult to put it back on your head. You need two people. So when the little boy came, it's Krishna, what do you want? Oh, could you put this back on my head? So that's what we're like. We're asking that all the time. Could you put the problem back on my head, please? It fell off, you know. I just need it on my head again. Oh, this is so difficult. Oops, it's fallen down. Please, please. Krishna, Krishna, put it back on my head. Oh, thank you, Krishna. Oh, he's so merciful. And he's saying, why are you doing this? Why are you suffering? What are you doing? And we're like, oh, he doesn't help me very much. I don't know, I can't relate to him. I don't really know if he's there even. And he seems to give me so many problems. And he's just bothering me all the time, you know, this, and he's teaching me through this suffering and that suffering. And he's saying, why are you doing all of this? Why don't you come to me? I'll take care of everything. No way. Because this, to the conditioned soul, is like a statement of death. It's like a statement of annihilation. We should understand how diseased we are when we take a material body and a false ego. To the false ego, the statement of Krishna saying, just come to me, is the most challenging thing that he could say to us. Why? Because we're going to have to give up our false ego. And to that, we feel like I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be annihilated. How can I annihilate myself for this person? What? No one can do that. So therefore, without the mercy of a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, like Srila Rupa Goswami, to assure us and to help us, we will not be able to make that transition out of false ego. It's impossible. Because to us, we identify with our mind and body now as ourselves. And Krishna is saying, discard that. That's like, he's saying, discard yourself. So how can I surrender to a person who wants to discard me? I can't. So until we become purified, until we can understand that I exist beyond my mind, beyond my body, that's me. And Krishna is trying to extract me from so much suffering and illusion and misidentification. Until that becomes clear to us, it's very difficult to make rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness. We tend to go round in spirals like this. You start here and go like that, you go up a little bit and you go like that, you go up a tiny bit and you go like that again, you go up a little bit, and we don't go like that. We go very hard work and slow. This is in the beginning. So if you feel for yourself, oh, that's exactly where I am. then we should take more shelter, even though it's against the mood of our false ego. We should do it anyway because it will actually work. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada in this lecture in Melbourne in 1976, she asked Srila Prabhupada, can you make spiritual advancement? Because in those days all the devotees were young and they were all Westerners. So she said, can you make spiritual advancement without serving the deities, without deity worship? Because we didn't really understand the deities very well. We weren't sort of very mature. So Srila Prabhupada, who did understand the deities, that the deity is Krishna himself, he replied to her quite firmly. He said, spiritual life means service to Krishna, because the deity is Krishna to him. For us it's the deities, to him it's Krishna. Spiritual life means service to Krishna. If you don't serve Krishna, where is your spiritual life? That is the difference between material life and spiritual life. In the material life, you serve, but you don't serve Krishna. Or you serve Krishna indirectly, under pressure. But actually, when you serve Krishna, then you are situated in spiritual life. Just like a rich father, he doesn't need any help from his sons. But if the son, after growing up, he is now earning, and if he offers something to his father, oh, he becomes very, very happy. That is natural. So our connection with the Supreme Father is like that. He is not in want. He doesn't require anything from me. But it is for my interest. If I offer something, then I become the very pet son of my father. That is called bhakti. This is devotional service or Krishna consciousness. And why should we not offer? There, then, we are in, and here's another lovely word, then we are in ingratitude. Srila Prabhupada found so many nice words to add to the English language. We are in ingratitude. Suppose the father is supplying everything, and if I do not offer anything to my father, is that very good business? Is that very nice? He's offering you everything, everything that he's, everything you have is his, and he's given it to you, put it in your care, and I don't have anything to offer him back. Is that very nice? Is that very good business? No. So now I would also, this is something I'm sure that the devotees who've done their Bhakti Shastri have heard, that Srila Prabhupada created what he used to call the peace formula. Everyone is aware of that? Yes? No? Okay. So every one of us is trying to be happy and satisfied. This is the struggle for existence. But if we understand three things, Prabhupada said, this is the peace formula. And this is the formula, Prabhupada said, for inner peace, personal peace, and also this is the only formula that will ever bring peace in the whole world. If we understand three principles, one, that God is the Supreme Father, two, that God is the Supreme Proprietor, and three, that God is the Supreme Friend. These three things, if you understand, then you will become peaceful immediately. Now that's nice, isn't it? If you understand these three things immediately, here's the pill that we were asking for. Immediately, if you understand them. And you try it sometime if you have the wherewithal to remember in a difficult situation these three things. And you, if you think about it, these three things would solve everything. That he's friendly, it means I've got a friend, I've got a support, I've got a patron, as Prabhupada would call it. Somebody who'll take care of me. And that he owns everything. So why am I so worried about a few dollars and a few things here and there and the maintenance of one small family in the midst of all the whole world that's taking up all my time? Or if I could go to him in my thoughts immediately it would relieve me of so much anxiety. And naturally, of course, if I had realization of this, then I would always be peaceful. And if I could understand that he's the father of everyone, that would force me to try to be more compassionate to other people, to see them in a more kindly way, because then I have to understand, oh, they're brothers and sisters. It's not easy. I'm sure we all know that. But still, even if you think of it for a moment, it will make your mind peaceful. You are seeking friends to get some help, so many. But if we simply accept God, Krishna, as my friend, supreme friend, your friendship problem is solved. Similarly, if we accept God as the supreme proprietor, then our other problem is solved. But because we are falsely claiming proprietorship of things which belong to God, we cannot do it. He is such a nice friend that I am transmigrating from one body to another, and Krishna is also transmigrating in the same body, the super soul. Suppose I go to the body of a hog. Oh, Krishna is present there. He's such a friend. Now suppose we have got our friends. So when I've got richness, says Prabhupada, I'm very rich, I will have so many friends. But suppose I'm poverty stricken. Oh, no friends will come to me. But Krishna is not such a friend. Krishna is such a good friend. In whatever condition you may be living, he is always with you. He is always with you. So what is our problem? Prabhupada says, our problem is how to serve Krishna honestly. That is our problem. The devotees are always anxious. Here, Krishna is the enjoyer and we are enjoyed. So our business is to see all the time how I am being enjoyed by Krishna, by serving him. Is Krishna the enjoyer in the situation or am I the enjoyer? How to serve Krishna honestly. This is devotion. This is Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada gave one message here that I found for the Indian boys. He said, just like some of our Indian boys, sometimes they come. They have come here to learn technology. So sometimes they question. They are surprised that they have rejected these things. They have come here to learn technology. So when they see that Swamiji is introducing these things which they have rejected in India, we're very surprised. So Prabhupada is saying here, because they have rejected in India, he says, so I also came for that purpose. Not the purpose of technology, but the purpose because they rejected it in India. So I came too. So he says, so I also came for that purpose. Because our modern India has rejected spiritual knowledge. They are thinking that if we can imitate westernized technology, then we will be happy. This is called Maya. They do not see that those who are advanced 300 times more than us in technology, what have they got? They do not see that. India cannot advance in technology like America or Europe at least for 300 years or more, because in those Western countries they have taken this as their business since a very long time. But Indian culture, beginning from the creation, is spiritual culture. Who can speak like this except Srila Prabhupada? Who can speak on behalf of India and chastise all the Indians like this? Who can tell them, what are you doing? You are chasing after the Western glamour and the attraction, and you want some money, and you're so calculating sometimes, you're thinking, I'll make a lot of money here in the West, and then I'll retire early, and I'll go and I'll get whatever I want together and enjoy life and do so many things. I met one young Indian boy. He was a devotee. He was been from the Gurukul. And I met him one day in the 1990s. And he was a young man, under 30 years of age. And we were on a bus going to Mayapur, on the, you know, the bus that takes people. So I saw him, who was sitting there, and I said to him, "So what are you doing?" Because I knew him from before. He said, "I'm working very hard now." I said, "Are you?" He said, "Yes, because I want to retire." I said, "Do you?" He said, "Yes, I want to retire at 30 years. I said, 30 years old isn't very old. He said, "No, you see, 30 years old." So I said, "But it's not very old." He said, "No, no, I'm going to go and I'm going to work very hard and then I will retire." So his history has been, I've been watching him throughout his life because he happens to living quite nearby. And so then he came, eventually he became very attracted. "Where should I go? I want to go to the West." And so somebody compassionately thought, before he gets himself into a lot of trouble, because he's a little brainless, we should send him to a temple in the West because he could end up anywhere. So somebody who was his benefactor brought him to stay in a temple in the West. So for some time he was collecting money for the temple. But very quickly he noticed that other people were coming and they were collecting money for themselves. So he said to himself, "If other people can collect money for themselves, why shouldn't I collect money for myself? It's not because I'm greedy or anything. It's just because they do." So I said, "Are you sure this is very good logic?" He said, "Yes, I came here quite innocent and pure, just attempting to become a very sincere devotee. But I saw them and that attracted me. So now I'm collecting money for myself." Okay, so that was the next step. So you collect money for yourself. So he collected money for himself, he needed an education, he collected money for his education, and then he found himself a job, and when he got himself a job, he got a lot of money. And he was a brahmachari, he didn't have anything to spend money on. So he was bewildered, "I've got so much money, I must buy something." So it was just like, you know, the story of the Brahmin chanting with the two sets of kopin. So similarly, he said, "I must buy something. I should get involved in real estate." So he bought himself a little house, and he was paying the little house off. And as he was paying off the little house, he began to hear that there's lots of real estate agents, not just one. And he looked around, he found the best real estate agent. And the best real estate agent said to him, "Why are you buying a little house? Look, this house is available. It's a huge house, and it's so cheap." And he said, "My goodness, I've got to sell my little house immediately, and then I'll buy the other house." So he sold his little house, and he bought the big house. But the big house has twice as much mortgage, or 10 times as much mortgage. And he doesn't like to be in debt because he's a good Indian. So Indians don't like to be in debt. So what should he do? Quite logically, he must work 2 jobs. An 8-hour in the day and an 8-hour at night. It's logical, isn't it? Everyone can follow. But because it's shift work, he can't chant his rounds anymore. There's a little problem because you fit them in here and there, and I have a clicker now. So I've become even more modern. I can click, 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 click when I'm awake, and when I fall asleep, I can click, 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 click. And in that way, somehow or other, maybe I've got all my rounds done. So his spiritual life is going down. His material life is coming up. So then he thinks, "Well, I've got a house, a big house, you know, and I've got all these people living in the house, I'm getting rent on the house, but then they give me trouble because things break down in the house and that takes away from the rent and so on and so forth." And his mind is becoming more and more feverish in the time he has off from his 2 jobs. And then he decides, "Well, if you have a house, you should have a wife. So I must go to India and get a wife." So he gets himself a wife. He brings his wife back. But he has no time to spend with his wife because he works all day and all night. And he tells his wife, "If you ever say anything to me about the fact that I work all day and all night, I'll be very angry with you." And all the wiser older persons say to him, "You know you shouldn't work so hard. You know you should take care of your family." And he goes, no, 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 please don't say that to me. I've got it all under control. And then he thinks, you have a wife. What do you do next? You have a child. So he has a child. But he's not there in the day. He's not there in the night. He's working so hard to pay off his house. And when you have a wife and a child, you need another house. So we get another house. So he's got two mortgages now, so there's no way he can possibly ever get out of working day and night. And when anyone says to him, Prabhu, you're working so hard, he says, no, no, don't worry, at night I actually sleep. And then he's driving and everything, tired, so many problems. But he takes it all on with a spirit of, what? What? But this is the Indian mentality gone wrong. I have to say it. In India, there's so much tenacity because it is coming from the Vedic culture. When you turn all that tenacity towards ambition in the material world, you tend to become a greater fool than a Westerner. Because a Westerner at least will say, I'm going to enjoy the weekend. I'm going to have a good time. I work so hard. I make so much money. It's ridiculous. I'm going to have some fun as well. But an Indian, no, 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 no. Have to keep working. So then he buys another house. As an investment. And he buys it when they're very cheap. And we say to him, Prabhu, you're under so much pressure already. Why don't you sell one of your houses? No, I can't possibly. This one is like that. That one is like this. This one I have them all. They're all following Suda Veg. But over here, it's difficult to get people who can be Suda Veg. So maybe we can have a little onions and garlic over here. And if somebody's a little bit something, something, never mind. And so implication. And they don't see it. Because you're running on a treadmill too fast to stop and say, what am I doing with my life? And what about my child? What is he seeing? When does he learn? Who does he learn from? What is his example? Where does he get his human qualities developed from? Because I'm too busy. I'm busy making money. I'm working for him. Yeah, right. Our problem is how to serve Krishna honestly. We should be very careful to note when Prabhupada says that. How to serve Krishna honestly. If you would take a person like that and you would say, can you put the same determination and energy into your Krishna bhakti, work two shifts at the temple, do this, do that, do this, do that? No. They'd be exploiting me. I need this. I need that. And now we started with nothing, but now we have a television like this in the front room. And we used to watch Hindi movies, you know, quasi spiritual Hindi movies. But we've also discovered that the Western people like sport. So, you know, we were trying our best to kind of go on a path of Krishna consciousness. And, you know, but, you know, so, you know. So do we, by telling you this example, I'm asking you, look at yourselves. Don't go on this path. This is what Krishna, who is very friendly, is putting in my mouth as words to tell you. He's very friendly. He says, I'll go with you wherever you want to go. But why are you going to cause yourself so much needless suffering? If you want to do it, then Rishikesh, the master of the senses, will give you the intelligence how to do it, just like he is giving Arjuna intelligence. Therefore, he is mentioned as Rishikesh. Just like a child has got intelligence, but it is guided by the parent's intelligence. My dear son, do like this, do like this, and he does it. Similarly, we have got all this mind, intelligence, and everything. But that is meant to be guided by the superintelligence of Krishna. Now, Prabhupada wants to give us a warning. He says, it is a very dangerous position that the present moment there is no arrangement in any state all over the world about spiritual education. In any place, all over the world, you go to any university and you will see there is nothing spiritually available for them. It is pushing the human the human society into the darkest region of existence. Actually, it is happening. In your country, your rich country, you have got nice educational system, so many universities, but what class of men are you producing? The more we advance in material education, the more we will be hampered to understand what is God. And at last we shall declare, God is dead. I am God. You are God. This is the nonsense. This is hinted here. There are two kinds of darkness. If you remain in ignorance, that is darkness. But if you remain educated in this way, that is also darkness. But we don't say no. We don't say don't do this and don't do that. We go back to the principle of yukta vairagya. So Prabhupada says, Sri Isu Upanishad teaches us that we should be very careful. We should not be very much advanced. Oh, we may be advanced. So Prabhupada was very good at doing this. He would say, don't do this. But then, of course, because everyone is doing it, he would say, well, then do it, but do it like this. In other words, he would give you the hint. His first instruction would be the highest. Don't do it. And then the second instruction would be, all right, you want to do it, then do it like this. So therefore, the intelligent person would take the first instruction, and the less intelligent person could take the second instruction, and both could be under the shelter of his instructions at the same time. We should not be very much advanced, or we may be advanced, that doesn't matter. We don't say that you don't advance in material education. You advance, but at the same time, yukta vairagya, you become Krishna conscious. That is our propaganda. We don't say that you don't. You do not manufacture motor car. You do not manufacture so many machines. We don't say that. But we say, all right, you have manufactured this machine. Now employ it in Krishna's service. That is the proposal. We don't say stop. We don't say that you don't have any sex life. But we say, yes, you have sex life, but for Krishna. You produce Krishna-conscious children. You can have sex life hundreds of times if you produce Krishna-conscious children. But don't create cats and dogs. That is our proposal. One therefore should not take this process of Krishna consciousness as something cheap, but as a matchless gift bestowed upon suffering humanity by the Lord Himself. Simply by engaging in this process, all the anxieties and the fears of one's life, which in actuality revolve around fear of death, all those anxieties and fears will be allayed. You have not joined this movement for your poverty. So most people here, they were not poverty stricken and therefore they became devotees to get something like that. They already had something, but they've come here out of their intelligence that they see that they want something more. So Prabhupada says, you have not joined this movement for your poverty. You were not poverty stricken. Sometimes people join this movement for poverty stricken. But you were not belonging to that. You have all voluntarily joined. So please, don't be disappointed. There is now opposition. But don't be disappointed. Krishna will give you protection. Try to go on with this para upakar movement. Maybe because it is a fight against atheism, so some of our soldiers may fall down. But that should not discourage us. We must go on fighting this atheistic civilization and try to push this Krishna consciousness movement. So we say these bold words of Srila Prabhupada's, but we say them in all honesty with a little embarrassment because we do not have that mature spirit that Srila Prabhupada exhibited to stand up in front of the atheistic, materialistic society and label it. We're all, I speak for myself, I would assume therefore for all of us, we're not exactly that bold and brave and realized. But we should take whatever service and realization we have and we should develop it. We should be serious about that. Whatever level we're of understanding we're on, we can go further. And we should take that as our purpose in this life. We may not be able to jump across the bridge from our time in captured capsule out, boop, over to the other side. That's not possible. And neither when we got there would we be allowed to stay. Just like if these boat people come to Australia, they're exiled to a place outside of Australia. They can't force entry. So neither can we force entry into the spiritual realm. We have to learn to become dependent on Krishna, to trust Krishna, to become Krishna's friend because he's already our friend. And we have to try to give as much as we can of ourselves under whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. And by doing that effort, Prabhupada will be pleased with us. And then we will become like his pet son. He's a very good boy. When Prabhupada would come sometimes, there were certain people, he would pat them on the head. Good boy, he's a good boy. So we should want that. We should want that as a reward for our endeavors in this life. So I'll finish here. By the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami, we have heard something from Srila Prabhupada. We've heard about the material, the spiritual, and a little bit about how to get there. And we've been together for the last 2.5, two sections make up 3 days. And for myself, I say it has been very wonderful to be with the devotees from Melbourne again and to see you all and see how you're growing and you're maturing and you're continuing in your service to Sri Sri Radha Balava. And may there be many more new faces amongst you every year. And also may there be many old faces as well. We don't like this revolving door. We like people to stay as well as new people to join. And may you increase the devotional family of Sri Sri Radha Balava by your own devotional activities to support the deities in the temple, by your preaching activities if you're so empowered, and give Krishna consciousness to others. And in this way, to make the effort to offer something for their pleasure. And I'm sure that next year when we come for the retreat, we'll see that everyone is looking more bright-faced, more mature, and has grown. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.